This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.
Hi, everybody. Welcome again to Recovery Radio. My name is Steve Martorano. You find us here on Saturdays at this time talking about the disease of addiction, most particularly with regard to recovery. Millions and millions of people manage long-term successful sobriety if they get the right treatment, and we're here to educate and inform you about that. Recovery Radio, sponsored by Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. Sounds in the background provided by our hosts and sponsors. We are, as you listen to this, it's a Saturday, of course. We are, in fact, recording this the previous Sunday, October 1st. Gorgeous, gorgeous fall day in Akron, Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, right on the site of Retreat's outpatient services facility for their fifth annual Fall Fest. So we hope you can spend some time with us and listen to some of the music in the background. I'll probably get one of those musicians over here later in the program to talk to us about what they're doing, maybe some of the people that are up here. This is a great event, as I say, in its fifth year, the purpose of which we will find out from the source, and that is Peter Shore. Peter is the CEO and founder of Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers, and we welcome him back to the program. Hello, Peter.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
I am terrific. First of all, it's a shame about the weather today on the 1st of October.
Terrible.
This is an absolutely gorgeous day. So, fifth year Fall Fest. Tell us about Fall Fest.
Well, Fall Fest, we started 5 years ago after we were open a year. We just celebrated our six-year anniversary of Retreat. We did it to give back to the community that's given so much to us. And as you see, we have a lot of vendors and a lot of different food vendors that everything is free. We want the community to know that we appreciate the support that they give us in helping us do the work that we do, and that's fighting the disease of addiction.
You know, Retreat has done a terrific job of integrating their facilities into the communities they're in, which now include not only what's up here in Lancaster County, but in West Palm Beach in Florida, and I know there are plans for other parts of the Northeast as well. But before one patient is admitted to one bed in any of your facilities, a lot of work has to go on to create this kind of community involvement, correct?
Yes, it is. It's a process, and you need to get connected to the community you're going to be in, because one of the things about drug and alcohol facilities is you know, there's that old acronym NIMBY, not in my backyard. No one wants one in their backyard, because they're not sure of what goes on in a drug and alcohol treatment center. You know, people are not educated on the disease, and they have no idea what we do. They think everyone's a criminal or everyone has mental health problems, and it's you and I in there. And once they find out, when we talk to them, and we opened up a family education program to our community, that they can come out and they can, you know, learn about the disease. And we just started something really new, and it's really exciting. We're doing, it's like a traveling family education program where we go to all community centers and synagogues and churches and schools, community centers, PTA meetings, where we educate the people on the disease of addiction, because that's important. It's not so much important that we're promoting just Retreat. We're promoting education in the disease.
I know one of the things you have made sure that I make a particular point of every week is that, despite the fact, you know, you pay the freight here as the sponsor of Recovery Radio, that it's really about educating people on this disease. And I want to thank you again for that opportunity for us, because I think it's the real value of a program like this. You know, Peter, so we've done some lifting over the years, changing the attitude about this disease. I think it's certainly in your lifetime, my lifetime, I've never seen addiction more front and center in people's consciousness, and lots of those preconceptions are going away, or changing it anyway. With regard to this, bringing a place like Retreat into your community, what are the misconceptions, people? You mentioned a couple of them. What are some of the other misconceptions people have about having a facility like Retreat in their community? What are they worried about?
Well, like I said before, it's the unknown, the fear of the unknown. They don't know what goes on, and they hear stories and rumors and all different kinds of false information that they make their own assumptions without knowing. And what happens when you make an assumption?
Yeah, right. You usually get it wrong.
There's also something else is said about it, but we won't say it on the family radio show.
Right. Well, but I mean, I know just watching what's happened here in Lancaster County is that there is a tremendous positive effect on the community. You know, in the sort of mundane jobs creation and tax based stuff. But these places are really good neighbors.
But it's even more than that. When we first came to Lancaster 6 years ago, there was real no recovery community. And, you know, people were floundering. They just, you know, they went to treatment, you know, somewhere else, and there was nothing else to do. There was just, that was it. We really developed a recovery culture in Lancaster County, and it's really taken off, and it's something that's mind-boggling how many people are here that are in recovery and doing so well because of it.
You talk about a community. You're not just talking about people who may have availed themselves of your services. You're talking about people who are affected by this disease in any way they are.
Yeah, I'm talking about not treatment-wise. I'm talking about just the culture of recovery, and that's important. I mean,
well, let's talk about that for a minute. 5-6 years ago when you arrived here, describe what community there did exist, what culture of addiction and recovery existed.
Well, you got to remember, 6 years ago, treatment was still on the, you know, on the don't do list, because, you know, you get that stigma, you went to a drug and alcohol facility, there's definitely something wrong with you. So like you said before, it's more in the forefront now. It's in the newspapers all the time. They had all these television shows, even though they're corny and staged, but they bring light to it, and people see that other people do it. So it really changed the thinking. And people understand, you know, that addiction is deadly now. I mean, people are dying. The number one cause of death for our young adults from 18 to 25 is from overdoses. It shouldn't be like that.
And it's incredible. In Pennsylvania, I think last year or the year before, the number of deaths from overdoses exceeded traffic fatalities.
No, it's the number one 18 to 25. Not only in every state. It's mind-boggling the numbers of people that are dying from this disease, and it really is about parents getting educated, the children getting educated, and understanding that this disease is deadly.
Let me ask you something about that with regard to people for whom this disease has not impacted them in any way. Maybe they know somebody who's had this problem, but it hasn't hit their family. Now, they have young people. They need to be informed about how at risk their children are, whether they're aware of it or not. Isn't that the case?
Exactly. That's why we want to do this education program in the schools, where and we have to educate not only the children, but we need to educate the parents and the teachers to see what it is, understand what the disease is about, because I don't know anybody in this country anymore who doesn't know someone who's been affected by the disease of addiction. That's how rampant it is, and how it's spread through our country, not let alone the world. So, you know, education is important, and we got to keep doing it.
And in spite of the numbers, which are now apparent and all over the media, in spite of all that, there is still, I believe, a sense among a lot of people that this can't happen to us. This can't happen to my family. And I've often said this, and wonder if you agree. If addiction were an airborne disease, like the flu, or something that can become an epidemic through that kind of transmission, people would be properly aroused and not take for granted that they can't get it. This is much the same situation.
Yeah, you know what it is, Steve? People think that people who use drugs and alcohol did this to themselves. You know, and again, if you look at it, and believe me, I believe that everybody who has an addiction should be able to get treatment and be able to get, you know, as much treatment as they need, just as much as if they had diabetes or cancer or anything like that, any disease. You know, they don't talk about, well, someone smoked cigarettes, they got lung cancer, they did it to themselves. They still deserve to be treated. You know, someone who, it's an addiction also. Someone who ate too much and obesity was in their family, developed diabetes. Does that mean we don't treat the diabetes? But it's looked upon differently. We're still looked upon as the redheaded stepchild. And we need to get that stigma out of the way, where addiction is a disease. Whether or not someone used something and that's how they became an addict, whatever the reason is, they are one. We need to help them.
One of the benefits of a thing like Fall Fest, and we tried to make this clear, I hope we did on last week's program with Jack Sodak, who's your director of outpatient services. Jack was on, and we talked about Fall Fest. One of the things that's critical for people to know is that it's possible to go to treatment facilities like Retreat. Certainly, I know you guys are in the forefront. Even if you don't, you're not looking for treatment, just to find out what the stakes are and what a place like this is like. That's one of the benefits of having Fall Fest, correct?
It is. I mean, you know, people get to see our facility if they want to go on a tour. We're open for tours also. But, you know, it's really about, we've really, you know, become part of this community. And, you know, over the years, we've opened our doors to many locals and their families who need a treatment. And just on an education basis, you know, we're very involved with the schools and the library. And we really want to give back. And we want people to have the knowledge and understand. Because you go in one of our inpatient communities where, you know, we could have 175 patients. And you ask the community, does anyone know someone who's died from this disease? And every single person will raise at least a hand or two.
Died.
Not but right, but you know what? They'll still have that mentality. It's not going to happen to me.
Not going to happen to me, yes.
It's mind-boggling that someone could think that when their friend died of it right next to them.
Exactly. As I said, if it were something you could catch by coughing or sneezing, you'd worry you were going to get it. This seems... Another insidious factor about the disease of addiction is it hides itself until it hits you full force, and then you go, oh my God, why wasn't I more aware of how dangerous this was? So we're grateful for the program. We really appreciate the support to Recovery Radio you guys provide in the area of just doing that, raising the alarm without panicking people, but the stakes are high.
It is. You know, life and death. You know, that we tell all the people that work for Retreat, they all have a hand in saving someone's life. And no matter what the job is, there's no small jobs here. Whatever you do contributes to that person saving their life.
Peter Shore, who is the CEO and founder of Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers and our host as we tape this October 1st from their fifth annual Fall Fest. Peter, thanks so much. I know we're going to have a bunch of folks from your alumni program come by and some of the other people that are taking part in Fall Fest. Thanks again for inviting us. It's always a pleasure seeing you.
Thank you, Steve, and I hope to see you soon.
Stick around. We have more on Recovery Radio. Do not go away. Hi, welcome back to Recovery Radio. Steve Martorano with you. As you can hear, the sounds of Fall Fest in the background. We hope it's as pretty a Saturday as you listen to this as it is on Sunday, October the 1st, as we record it from Premier Addiction Treatment Center's Fall Fest. This is their fifth annual Fall Fest, our second up here, and we're bringing you some of the sounds and people involved in this. One of those people who's critical to a number of things that go on at Retreat is Maggie Hunt. Maggie's a frequent contributor to the program. She heads up the alumni group at Retreat, and this is one of their events. Hi, Maggie. Good to see you.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me.
So tell us about the alumni group and what's going on here at Fall Fest.
Well, yeah, Retreat recognizes that, you know, continued support in early recovery, like, really will help set the stage for their future. We want to, like, the alumni to stay connected, so we kind of celebrate them a little bit. Today is one of their quarterly events, so we're here today to celebrate their recovery and their families, really, because a lot of people brought their families with them. So that's what we're doing today, Steve.
So who did you, I know we have a fellow with us who was, I think, with us last year.
Yeah, I think he did it last year, Fall he told
Fest.
Me.
Michael, hi Mike.
Hi Steve.
Good to see you again.
You too.
Wearing your colors, I see.
That's it.
So let's see, we're recording this on October the 1st when the Eagles will have played the Chargers, right?
Yep, we'll be 3-1 by that
point. I didn't have to prompt him at all. Mike, good to see you again. Let's bring in people who might not be familiar with your story. Can you share it with us?
Yeah, so my journey with Retreat began in March of 2014. That's when I decided to enter treatment as a patient. Retreat was the first place that I went to. I completed a 30-day stay with Retreat as an inpatient, and then after that I stepped down to their IOP program. I did that for a number of months, about 7 months. And I was blessed in that I was able to actually come back and work for Retreat around a year and a half sober. And I've been working with Retreat for, you know, over 2 years now.
So. And sober that long?
Yes, I'm coming up on a little over 3.5 years.
Oh, that's great. That is great. we left a lot of the story out there, and I just want to take a moment to have you share a couple of significant points in your journey. As you know, there's great power in hearing people's first person accounts of how they struggle through this disease. Do you remember the first time you decided, or had somebody decide for you, it was time to get treatment? What were the circumstances of that?
Yeah, so, you know, as much control as I thought I had on the issue, you know, I wasn't going to go to treatment under my own accord. You know, for me, it all began, as many people do who struggle with, you know, opiates. There's not enough money in the world to pay for that stuff. So, you know, I resorted to other measures, and those other measures eventually, led me with some legal charges.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not a dumb person. I figured, you know, it would look better on my resume, so to speak, to go to treatment, kind of nip it in the bud. So I entered treatment, you know, not under the best of circumstances, pretty much because I had to, you know, and somewhere along the way, because, you know, the treatment team I was put in contact with, the people I was surrounded by, you know, something switched. And, you know, I decided that, you know, the life I had been living up to that point wasn't a life at all. You know, so it was at that point I began to get serious about my recovery. There's been some pitfalls along the way, as, you know, I'm sure you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
But
every cliche is true. It's amazing. You can force somebody into treatment, either, you know, through a court order or family pressure, but you can't force anybody to manage this disease, can you?
No. And, you know, my experience has shown me that, you know, whatever gets that person in the door, you know, be it, like you said, legal issues, you know, court order, family intervention, you know, a place of employment holding that over their head, whatever gets them in the door is great. You know, we're just, that's another day sober that person might have otherwise not had. And, you know, but at the end of the day, sustained long-term sobriety for me has to be an inside job, so to speak. You know, I can't get and stay sober for, you know, my loved ones, for, you know, the court system, for my job. I have to do it, you know, for a sense of purpose for
myself.
Yeah,
that's the choice you're now making.
Yeah.
So you were abusing heroin at the end, right?
No, I was not using heroin.
Oh,
I was using Oxycontin, crack cocaine, you know, pretty much whatever else I could find. I hadn't yet been introduced to heroin, but, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that
you were headed there.
That's where I was going.
Yeah. How old were you at that moment when you got into treatment?
I was 23 years old when I went into retreat.
And you'd been abusing drugs for how long?
About 6 years at that point.
So you got started pretty young, right?
Yeah.
And going hard. And then, so you go through treatment, and, you know, as you say, you stumble, you pick yourself back up, you try again, and now you're over 3 years sober. Do you look back on that other life, and is it like it happened to somebody else, or can you actually remember that it was you?
Yeah, and that's one of the things that's been, you know, mind-blowing to me, is I look back on it, and, you know, I haven't, in the grand scheme of things, I haven't been in recovery for, you know, that long. You know, like I said, a little over 3.5 years now, but, you know, it's been a lifetime. And, you know, social media is great because I look back on, you know, Facebook statuses, and, you know, they have a time hop and whatnot where, you know, you can see what you were doing, you know, 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And I look at this stuff sometimes and I'm just like, wow.
Right.
You know, I can't believe that's, you know, it's the ramblings of a psychopath is how I like to equate it.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You just said you have only been in recovery or sober for 3.5 years. What that points out is the truth of your situation and anybody else with the disease of addiction, and that is that recovery is not something that you really measure in days or weeks or years. This is the rest of your life.
Yeah, and for me, I had a tough time, you know, kind of accepting that at first. I kind of
looked
at this as, you know, a homework assignment, you know, check this off, check that off, and, you know, I'm good now. I can, you know, do these things successfully. But, you know, like I said, it's got from a point where, you know, I have to be sober to, you know, I want to be sober.
And now in the field, how long have you been working for Retreat?
I've been with Retreat since August of 2015. I started out as a clinical aide, and I did that for about a year. Then I moved down to the intake department. You know, I deal with people like myself who, you know, when they first come into the door, otherwise, you know, not in their right mind. And, you know, I now work as the team lead for the intake department. We have a team of about 8 people, you know, signing paperwork, asking questions, whatnot, making a good first impression.
Mike, I want to get you on the show in some later date to talk about that intake procedure. It's a very, very critical moment in getting people treatment. If intake is messed up, the whole thing may collapse. So, Mike, congratulations on the sobriety. Thanks for sharing your story with us again. We look to have you back on Recovery Radio soon.
Thanks, Steve.
Hey, Maggie, we'll have some other people later
on. Yeah, I have somebody right behind me.
Great. This is Recovery Radio. We're on tape from Fall Fest, Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Center's gift to the community. Stay with us. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. Steve Martirano's quiet now as the band takes their break. We are at Fall Fest, having recorded this program on October 1st on a gorgeous day from Akron in Lancaster County. That is the site of Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Center's outpatient facility. This is their fifth annual Fall Fest. It's a great event that they do to integrate, bring back to the community what Retreat is doing here. People from the community are here, lots of kids, lots of events. It's a terrific event. And we've been talking to a number of people that are involved in it today. Maggie Hunt, who is the Director of Alumni Services here at Retreat, has been with us for the past couple of segments here and on other programs. Maggie, before we talk to another alumni, let's take a moment and talk about you know what exactly we're talking about when we mention an alumni group. People hear alumni, they go, what do you mean, like in high school or college when we all get together and talk about the good old days? I mean, so what is the purpose of an alumni group made up of people who have gone through treatment for substance abuse?
Yeah, I mean, actually, that kind of is what it is, though. You know, once somebody goes through Retreat, the second that they leave, they automatically become an alumni. And that's what we do. We kind of want to reconnect with them. We want to have them, celebrate each other and form those bonds in early recovery so that, you know, they don't ever have to feel like they're alone. They don't ever have to feel scared because all of the people that they're surrounding themselves went through the same thing. The alumni, almost like as it would be at like a high school or a college, they don't necessarily have to know each other, but they have that common bond. They have that underlying, situation. Maybe they had the same primary therapist. Maybe they went to the same groups. Maybe they did equine therapy together. They all kind of go through experiences together.
Talk a little bit about what a group of alumni meeting together is about. I mean, we're not talking about it. This is not a 12-step meeting. This is, it's more social, but it has a therapeutic benefit.
Yeah, right? we do a 12-step meeting, but we're 12-step neutral in the sense that whatever that individual chooses to maintain their sobriety, that's what they speak on behalf of. So whether they go to AA, whether they go to NA, whether they go to CA, whether they go to Refuge Recovery, whatever it is, you know, however they're staying sober through cognitive behavioral therapy, whatever, they come in and they share their experience.
So it might be social in the sense that all alumni gatherings are social. There's a real kind of therapeutic benefit. I know you have somebody with us that can speak directly to that,
yes,
right?
Who's yes. that? Yeah, this is Tracy. Tracy is really active with me. We communicate on a pretty regular basis because we have a Facebook page and an app, and she's really active on both of those. She's definitely interested in giving back as much as she can. She's not one to say that, like, you know, once she got sober that life was like rainbows and butterflies for her all the time. She's definitely has a lot of good self-awareness. And we were just saying when I was in a different role when Tracy came through inpatient, and she struggled, right? So she wanted to leave on a regular basis, and to see her sitting here today is just like such a miracle to have her here. So I won't tell her too much more, but this is Tracy.
Hi, Tracy. Welcome to Recovery Radio. Thanks for joining us.
Mm-hmm.
Is this your first visit to the Fall Fest?
It is my first visit to the Fall Fest.
This is great, isn't it?
It is phenomenal. I think last year was a little too raw. Too soon. You know, I came out of inpatient in August, and so Fall Fest in October was a little too new for me.
Yeah.
So it's an experience you have to go through and process. So
to the extent I know you guys are always terrific about sharing your story of substance abuse. Can you give us the sketch of your life?
Sure. I think my story's, I think everybody's story is important, but I think mine is a little different, and we need to get it out there because I'm a middle-aged, homemaker and mom of three who fell prey, so to speak, to addiction. When you have an addictive personality, you have an addictive personality. And unfortunately, I was in a pretty severe car accident ended up in 5 surgeries within 3 years, and became quite addicted to opioids.
How long ago was that, Tracy?
Just within the last 4 years.
You had had no problems prior to that, the pain situation, with alcohol or any other substances?
I didn't have with what you would consider your standard substance. I had that addictive personality. I struggled with some eating disordered thoughts, which certainly right. falls into that addictive issue.
But it's when you were prescribed opiates.
It was when I was prescribed. And honestly, you know, I have to own my addiction, and I do own my addiction, but I think that it's important that we get the word out to the physicians and to the community and to the healthcare that these medications aren't needed. You know, 10 days into the retreat, the wonderful retreat who saved my life, you know, 10 days in, and I was on Tylenol only.
You know, it's extraordinary. It's one of the few times I've wished that this was a television program rather than a radio program, because you're right. You would be, to most people's way of thinking, the least likely candidate
right.
for a substance abuse problem that would put
right.
you in treatment.
Exactly.
And yet, as we know now, you are the face
right.
of this opiate epidemic.
Right.
It's staggering what has happened with regard to, and we can't get into it deeply here, but
right.
I know I've read a lot, it's our healthcare system. When our healthcare system decided that pain was the fifth vital sign.
Exactly.
They began over-prescribing these medicines, and it sweeps up somebody
right.
like yourself. How bad did it get?
It got really bad. I think if Maggie could pull up my records from my intake, we'd be quite surprised at the level of OxyContin in my system. And not just OxyContin, I share everything. OxyContin, Tramadol, and muscle relaxers. All prescribed.
Yeah, all prescribed.
So all prescribed. I've never taken an illegal substance in my life. I took everything as prescribed, and I was quite addicted.
How is it your primary care physician or somebody in the medical community that was treating you and prescribing these medicines didn't see what was going on?
The only person who saw what was going on was my therapist, and Maggie brought up a really good point in how you stay sober, and I don't actually follow any of the 12 steps, but I had a primary therapist who we follow cognitive behavioral therapy, and that's how I'm staying sober and clear-minded and free. So again, everybody has a different path, and so she, about a year before I went into the retreat, even reached out to my medical professionals and was ignored. You know, we kept saying, we don't know what's going on here. I was in a fog. One of my daughters, I have 3 children. One of my teenage daughters said 3 weeks after coming home from the retreat that I did more in 3 weeks as a family than I did in 3 years.
So the family was aware that in spite of the fact these prescriptions were prescription medicines, you had serious accident, you did have pain, that something was changing.
Yes.
And they were aware of it before you were, or were you aware of it too?
I was aware of it. My family was actually less aware that it was a problem. They thought it was, they didn't like it, but they thought, well, the doctors know what they're doing. Because even going in, exactly, I saw the look on your face, yeah.
Yeah, we all thought the doctors, and I suppose to a certain extent the doctors thought they were doing it because
right.
they were being told by the pharmaceutical company and the New England Journals of Medicine
exactly.
that this stuff was not dangerous and
right.
you could go ahead and prescribe it. What was happening to you physically, though? This is so important. Your story is so important. What was happening to you while they were giving you these drugs that made you go, something's wrong here?
Right. I was a zombie. I sat at home. Literally, my family came and went, and physically, I just sat in a chair. I didn't leave my house. I didn't go to church anymore. I didn't go to school functions. I did not participate in life. And it took away 3 years of my life and 3 years of my children's lives.
And you were the kind of person who was involved.
So absolutely.
It was immediately apparent that there was something wrong.
Absolutely.
So when, and by the way, were you in pain at all during this whole process?
I don't know. I was numb. The medications were going into I was numb. My body was completely, the medications I were taking were, honestly, I was ingesting them because the withdrawals were so bad that I was trying to prevent the withdrawals.
Oh, that's what I wanted. So there were times when you would cut back on the prescribed
exactly.
drugs and you felt immediately sick.
Right. Horribly sick.
Did you tell your physicians?
So I checked myself in against even my family's wishes on a Sunday night to the retreat. Thank goodness for my primary therapist, because she's the one that found the retreat, interviewed the retreat for me, called, and even saw me on a Saturday to get me in. So I checked myself in on a Sunday night. The couple days before then, the Monday before then, I called my physician's office and said, you've got this pain management program. I really need off these pills. And I never received a return phone call.
It's astonishing. I mean, every week I come on the air and say we have people's first-person accounts of substance abuse and recovery, and all those stories are the same,
right,
except they're different.
Right.
And yours is dramatically different because yours is now, and again, you're right, these are all important stories. But what happened to you is what ratcheted this problem
exactly
into the realm it's in now.
Right.
Where, as I understand some of the statistics, the opiate epidemic is actually lowering our overall life expectancy in this country.
I would bet.
It's incredible. So you had to go through detox and everything.
Absolutely. It was the most horrible 24 hours of my life, my first 24 hours at the retreat. Every hour I said, I'm going to call my husband. I'm leaving. I'm going. And you go into the nurse's station and you sit there and you go, I want to call my husband. And they just look past you and they keep doing what they got to do for you because they know you're going to find that strength to get through it, and they're there for you. And
Tracy, so people can get their head around this. From the time you have your, was it an automobile accident?
Automobile accident.
From the time you have the automobile accident to the time you are suffering from withdrawal symptoms,
right,
and trying to get out of treatment, how long a period of time is that?
3 years.
So this happened in
2013.
Yeah, it happened very fast.
Oh, quickly. They say you can be body dependent in a week on Oxy, you know? I mean, very quickly. And honestly, I'm going to make it even more staggering. I don't even know if Maggie knows these numbers. I was going through 90 milligram Oxys a week, 20 milligram Oxys.
And having no trouble getting them.
And my daughter would go pick them up for me, the prescription, every Thursday from the doctor's office with our license. My doctor never even saw me.
Well, so extraordinary. As I said, you are, unfortunately, the
new face.
The kind of new face of, yep, of this disease.
Yep.
And it should be an unbelievable wake-up, right, call to people that are sitting around in suburban homes thinking, right, this can't happen to them.
Right.
It sure can happen.
It's absolutely horrible. And if it weren't for the retreat, I mean, I went in and I feel like I worked the program, even though I gave them a run for their money, wanting to always go home on the weekends. But if it weren't for the retreat and their support, you don't get through it. They say it was an experience I don't wish on anybody, but it was also an experience that everybody should go through. And the camaraderie, and we talked about this alumni piece. I texted Maggie yesterday and said, I'm going out to celebrate something, and here I don't think I have any desire to have any substance in my body, but yet it crossed my mind for a second. And so, but I love my clear brain. I love my ability to be a part of the community and the family and the church. I love all of that, and I couldn't have done it again without the retreat.
Yeah, well, you got your life back.
Exactly.
That's just fantastic. Maggie, thanks for introducing us to Tracy.
Yeah, thanks, Tracy.
Thank you.
Tracy, congratulations.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing
that
story. It's an important one. And everybody, we have more from Fall Fest here on Recovery Radio. Stick around. Hi, and welcome back to Recovery Radio. I'm Steve Martorano. Boy, we have had a lot of fun here today. As I mentioned at the beginning of the program and all the way through, we're recording this program on Sunday, October the 1st, in Akron, Lancaster County, at the outpatient services facility of Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers for Retreat's 5th annual Fall Fest. Oh, lots and lots of people and kids from the community and members of alumni and staff who have been through substance abuse treatment. They do it every year. It's a terrific event, and we're glad we're able to just capture some of that for you here on the program. Before I forget, I want to thank Peter Shore, who's, of course, the founder and CEO of Retreat. And without him, none of this happens. And Maggie Hunt, who is the director of the Alumni Services, who's gotten us some of our guests today, Kevin Walker, Ken Koza, all of the people at Retreat who not only sponsor the program, but put on Fall Fest. We're going to conclude the program today with yet another member of Maggie Hunt's alumni group. Tracy was our last guest. Julie joins us. I'm meeting her for the first time. She is now over a year in successful sobriety, having gone through treatment at Retreat, and she joins us to share her story. Hi, Julie. Thanks for stopping by.
Hello.
You got to talk up. Just speak a little louder so we can hear you. Thanks for doing this. As I told you before we went on the air, these stories of substance abuse and treatment are all the same, but they're different. So we'd like you to share yours with us. First of all, how old are you?
I am 26.
26 years old. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Burlington, New Jersey.
Ah. And how did you begin your trip down this lane of substance abuse? How did it start for you?
Well, I started drinking at a fairly young age, which led to other substances.
How young were you when you started? You say fairly young. You can't be the youngest person I've talked to, so don't worry about it.
I want to say 12.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, first drink.
And it was in the same context as every other 12, 13-year-old kid experimenting with beer or whatever's available, right?
Right.
How soon after that first drink did your habits change?
I would say a year or so after that. You know, I felt the effects, you know, the one time, and it made me feel as though I wasn't nervous. I could do things that, like, I wouldn't do if, you know, for say I was sober. And, you know, being that young, I didn't think that there was anything really wrong with it.
No, it's cool. You're feeling better, right?
Yeah.
Now suddenly you fit in.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So from fitting in, you try other stuff. And when does it start to get serious for you? Like, real serious?
It started getting serious, I would say, summer 2011. I was 20, and, you know, smoking weed. Can I say weed on here?
Sure, you can.
Okay.
You almost have to, don't you? Tell the story. Go ahead.
Weed and alcohol, you know, led to pills because weed wasn't enough, and that led to cocaine, and that was my drug of choice.
Coke was?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So how old were you when you started using cocaine?
1920.
Yeah, it's an expensive habit.
It was.
For a 1920-year-old.
It was real expensive.
And what was happening at home? Were your folks aware of this behavior?
They didn't know that I had an addiction. They thought that I had an eating disorder.
Because you're so thin.
Right.
Yeah.
And that is what I led them to believe. And my first treatment was actually an inpatient eating disorder.
For an eating disorder problem.
Yeah.
So you were using an eating disorder. That's very... Congratulations, it's pretty clever. I've never heard of that before. Using an eating disorder as a cover for your drug addiction.
Yeah.
And so that didn't work, right?
No, because, you know, I was there for a month, and surprise, I didn't put any weight on, you know. Got out, continued to misbehave and not do, I guess, the next right thing, and eventually, like, my mom and my dad, you know, they divorced, and that was, like, when I would, like, play my parents, you know, like...
Right.
You know, like, oh, well, don't tell daddy this, but, you know, like, you can know, like, you know, like, please don't, you know, and... It was just an experience that, like, if I could go back, like, I don't want to say I regret it, but it made me who I am today.
Yeah, sober. So how did you were in and out of a couple of treatment facilities until you finally figured it out and began applying some of the techniques and everything, now over a year sober. Do you remember when you turned that corner and why?
I got 2 DUIs.
Well, you got what?
I got 2 DUIs within, like, a 2-week radius of one another. And I was, well, first one I was, you know, pretty upset about.
Right.
I was like, all right, well, maybe there's hope. No, like... I continued to do the same thing, and that was drinking and driving, smoking weed in the car, driving to work,
right.
taking
You're a mess. So you get you got to retreat, right? Is that right? And were you in the inpatient program?
I was.
You had to be detoxed?
Yes. Oh yeah.
Yeah. And how do you look back on that now with a year of sobriety under your belt? By the way, are you confident you're going to stay sober?
Oh yeah.
You are?
For sure. I manage a recovery house, and I work for my recovery house as well. So, like, that gives me, you know, not just hope, but, you know, I don't want to say incentive to, you know, continue doing the right thing, but, like, it guides me in the right
direction.
Now
you know it's possible.
Right.
Julie, thanks for sharing the story with us. I appreciate you doing that. I appreciate you taking time out from having fun here at Fall Fest to sit down with us. Continued success. Good luck.
Thank you.
Everybody, thanks for joining us, and please look for Recovery Radio each and every Saturday at this time. See you next week.
This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.